For a long time, whenever Steve Dale would be on the show, I would call him noted pet expert Steve Dale, and then Eric Zorn got jealous. He was so jealous. He called us up one day. He was crying. I said, what's wrong, Eric? He said, I want an adjective. Why can't you describe me with an adjective? So we said, if you provide the adjectives, we'll provide the introduction. Here before us, Wendy, the radiant Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Hi, radiant Eric.
Hi. Thanks for that, too, by the way. Crying was probably a bit over the top. No. I probably shouldn't have done that. I was playing on your emotions, but it worked.
Radiant people don't cry.
Right. They glow.
Right.
That's what they do. Let's start out, if you wouldn't mind, talking about Diana Rauner's story. She, of course, the wife of our governor, Bruce Rauner, and some interesting timing recently.
Well, yeah, and when Bruce Rauner took over, he vowed that he was going to get rid of unnecessary government spending, and then almost immediately after that, he hired for his wife, Diana Rauner, a $100,000 person that they called her chief of staff, even though there is no staff for this person to be the chief of. It's just she's got a one-person staff.
What does she do?
Well, she oversees her scheduling, such as it is. You see, Diana Rauner works full-time. She's the head of the AMSA Prevention Fund. It's a not-for-profit organization. But this will also help coordinate, or this chief of staff helped coordinate the rehab of the governor's mansion in Springfield. You know,
I could have helped them.
It fell into great disrepair. Mm-hmm. To the Rauner's credit, they're having this done with private money. They've raised money to have it done, but the chief of staff is overseeing this. So this chief of staff, Sarah Wojcicki, she then was appointed to an empty state rep seat. So the position was vacant for a time. And then on Friday, kind of in that Friday afternoon news dump window, the governor's staff announced a bunch of new hires, and one of them was the new chief of staff for
Mrs. Rauner.
Yes, and for Diana Rauner. Emily Bastedo is her name. She was an associate counsel in the governor's office, acting as a legal liaison for several agencies. And then now she is going to be the $100,000 a year chief of staff to Diana Rauner. And the thing is, like, $100,000 is not even a rounding error in terms of the financial problems we have in this state. There are lots of positions we could probably point to that are outrageous, that maybe even make more money than that. But the symbolism of it and the timing was just awful, because we're having serious budget problems. Also on Friday, as you guys probably heard, Lutheran Social Services of Illinois announced a very significant reduction in its workforce due to the fact that the state is not able to fund its programs. They're going to be cutting 30 programs. They're going to be eliminating 750 positions. And so 4,700 people who get services from LSSI are not going to be getting them, which is really this budget crisis, this state financial crisis, really coming home to roost in a big way. Now, we've had some issues, right, with college students who get these MAP grants, the grants for low-income students, not getting those grants and not being able to go back to school. It's not like this has been a completely painless problem, but this is suddenly, we're sort of starting to turn the corner now in a place where agencies, programs are really running out of money. The pain is really being felt. So at this time, for the governor's office to appoint
someone terrible.
Whose job is still kind of, I mean, he's talking, when he said, I could do that. Yeah, okay, so you're overseeing the rehab of the mansion. I'm sure that's not nothing. You know, you got to get the right roofers and the right tapers and all the things that you do to do a rehab job.
It's definitely an important job, but I mean, I could do that for less.
You would think they could find somebody somehow to do it for less than $100,000.
Like a general contractor kind of thing, but it also seems like a strange
The timing
place.
Is really
well,
awkward.
Well, it's also, you know, why would you have the first lady's chief of staff be in charge of you think you'd want someone who is in contracting, who really knows, you know, what's going on there. Diana Rauner does not have a particularly high profile as first lady. She's busy. She's doing her own job. She doesn't do a lot of public appearances. And even if she did, you would think that the governor's press office could handle the limited scheduling problems that would impose.
But do the first ladies in other states have a similar job? Is there somebody who serves as chief of staff for the first ladies of other states?
I think that's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, the first lady of the United States has a staff, bigger staff than one person.
Yeah,
I am the second person of second lady of.
Oh, you are. I didn't realize that.
Of Illinois.
Oh.
You're the second lady.
So you
have a $50,000.
Yes.
And you have a staff infection, but you do not have a staff.
Well, the interesting thing about
You're lucky I like you, really.
The interesting thing about this is that the first lady, of course, is an unelected person, a citizen, not an elected, not even a government employee.
Yeah.
We got along fine, I guess, in Illinois without a first lady when Pat Quinn was governor. He's a bachelor.
Yeah.
He had a significant other, but she didn't play a prominent role at all. I think Patty Blagojevich may have had a scheduler. It's unclear. Brenda Edgar before that.
But you could get on your – there's an app on your phone for scheduling things.
You would think.
Right?
Yes, you would think.
And that's less than $100,000 a year.
And again, it's not as though the person wouldn't have anything to do, and it's not as though it's a terrible thing. It's just that the symbolism is all wrong.
Yeah. Yep. We don't have money. We don't have money. We need money for that, though, so there's some money.
Right. And, of course, his vow, Governor Rauner's vow, he was going to get rid of all unnecessary spending. He was going to be really flinty about that.
Yeah.
This just seems like just a
– In his opinion, what's unnecessary?
Yeah.
That's what it's sounding like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it came one day after this very strange, bizarre press conference that he had. Did you guys follow this at all? Where he comes out and he says, President Cullerton and I, comes out in the morning on Thursday morning, President Cullerton and I, John Cullerton of the Senate, a Democrat, have come to an agreement about a limited form of pension changes that we're going to impose. They're going to save us $1 billion a year. And again, $1 billion a year sounds like a lot, but our unfunded pension liability is somewhere north of $100 billion a year.
Wow.
Jeez.
So saving $100 billion, you got to start somewhere. And it was interesting because it seemed to us in the newsroom like, wow, this is a pretty interesting development, because this is a plan that President Cullerton had been advancing without a whole lot of success for a while.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a little complicated, but it says essentially, like, if you're making, say you're making $50,000, or say you're making $100,000 a year, you're a real important chief of staff. You're making $100,000 a year. There is a deal, and one of the crippling things about the pension deal in Illinois is that after you retire, you get a 3% compounded cost of living increase, and that actually adds up really quickly, because suddenly you start off with $100,000, you get $103,000, and then you get 3% of $103,000.
So every year it goes up 3%.
It goes up 3%, but compounded on the previous number. So that's
not every employee is guaranteed a 3% living wage.
A working employee isn't allowed that. So anyway, and this is one of the big cost drivers. It's one of the big reasons that our pension liability, future liability, is so large. Anyway, I mean, I don't want to make this too many numbers, because I promised Bill there would be no math.
I get confused.
I did hear the plan, though, and it did seem to make some sense.
It says basically either you can get this compounded thing going forward. It says, you know, starting right now, you can give you raises, but your raises won't count against your pensionable salary. Your salary for pension purposes is frozen.
Yeah.
Or you can keep You're compounded.
It's like, let's make a deal.
Lovely Carol Merrill is standing
the
in
raises.
Front of.
So in any case, it was sort of a complicated deal, but the way Rauner presented it, he didn't have Cullerton with him while he made the announcement, which made everybody go, wait a minute, if this is like a joint announcement, where is Cullerton? And he framed it in terms of saying that, well, and this means, of course, that from going forward, these people cannot collectively bargain on their wages. And this was either a misstatement or a misunderstanding by the governor as to what was actually in Cullerton's proposal. But Cullerton then fires back. Suddenly this big, you know, group hug deal falls apart.
Oh.
And it was widely seen as an unforced error by Rauner, that it was just he bungled that rollout.
Yeah.
And it may be that they can get back on the same page. But it was – so coming the day after that – and of course, we're 2 days away now from the State of the State speech.
Yeah.
The State of the State – is pretty bad right now.
Terrible.
Yep.
And there's a lot of blame for that to go around, of course. But you know, a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, when he was inaugurated, Rauner, you know, seemed to say, well, I'm going to right the ship. I'm going to shake things up. I'm going to get things done. And so far, it's basically been a year of squabbling and bickering.
More frustration.
As the unpaid bills mount up.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And so it's an interesting time.
Eric Zorn is here. He's radiant, but you already knew that he'd be radiant. That's no surprise to anybody. Stick around. We've got more coming your way in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here, the Radiant Tribune columnist. Eric Zorn sitting right over there.
Radiating.
You are radiating. You're like a radiator. The National Review. Let's talk about the National Review.
They came out with a special edition at the end of last week, essentially arguing that Donald Trump is not a fitting representative of the conservative cause, and that they need to all get together, marshal their forces, and block him as being inauthentic and not smart enough and not good enough, not pure enough in his fealty to
what are issues. The chances of that happening?
of them blocking him.
Yeah.
I don't think they're very good right now.
Yeah.
It looks like the polls have shown that, you know, he suffered a dip against Cruz in Iowa, but he seems to be surging again in Iowa. Part of it, I think, based on this contention that keeps coming up that Cruz is not a natural born American citizen because he was born in Canada.
That's what he's going on again.
Wendy hates this, but I think it's bothering some voters who might want to support Trump. One of the interesting things about this is that, you know, claiming that Trump is not a serious person, not a serious candidate, a lot of these people from the National Review are the same ones who were defending Sarah Palin so staunchly 8 years ago. Like, she was a fitting vice president. John McCain had made a good choice. And it to me, the irony is very rich in that they can't. They're more willing to throw Trump overboard, but they weren't willing to throw Sarah Palin overboard. And now they're, you know, joined at the hip, of course.
What about the talk? There's been a lot of conjecture that New York's former mayor, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, might enter the race as an independent. What does that do if he jumps in? Does that go?
If Hillary doesn't win the nomination, isn't that what his stipulation was?
I think that's what he's looking at. He's looking at the fact that if the Democrats nominate Bernie Sanders and the Republicans nominate either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, that you will have candidates that are really on the far opposite fringes of their parties.
Yeah.
And so the public will be looking for someone to sort of come in and
someone in the middle.
Well, Bloomberg has been a Democrat. He's been a Republican. He's now an independent. He's, you know, obviously very, very wealthy. He could self-fund his
own. But wouldn't the opponents play what you just said? Wouldn't that be exactly what they'd play against? They go, here's a guy who can't make up his mind about anything. Is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? Is he an independent?
Well, the thing is they're counting on that the voting public is fundamentally moderate, that there's a sort of a moderate streak in that we don't like people on the extremes. The base voters in the parties do like them, but that most people are kind of in the middle. Some are like, oh, I'm a little, you know, I, you know, the swing voters. People say, well, I like some of the economic plans of the Republicans. I kind of like the social views of the Democrats, so I'm persuadable. And he's counting on those people, kind of people going down. I mean, he's, because Bloomberg is socially liberal. He was the mayor of New York.
Right.
He couldn't be socially conservative and be the mayor of New York, economically somewhat conservative. So he would be planning on that. The record for third party candidates in this country is not great. And, you know, Ross Perot was kind of the voice of anger, the voice of rebellion. If you remember when he ran, was it 92, I think, was when he made his most prominent run. I think he maybe ran again 4 years after that. But 92 was Clinton Bush. Clinton Bush were very moderate. You know, Clinton was a moderate Democrat, and Bush was a moderate, the first Bush was a moderate mm-hmm. Republican. So in came Ross Perot, the voice of anger, and so on. He was the one who was going to attract all those voters. Now you have a situation where, in a sense, you've got two Ross Perots. If Bernie Sanders is nominated, you've got the Ross Perot of the right, the Ross Perot of the left, all expressing the anger of the public, and then you'd have someone coming in going, now, everybody, the adults in the room, I'm going to be. So I don't, you know, could Michael Bloomberg, he could take votes away from Sanders, he could take votes away from, you know, Trump or Cruz.
See, that's what I'm trying to figure out is, who does he detract from? I know he's pulling votes from somebody. Is it both parties? Would he get votes from both?
I'm sure he would. Well, Trump right now is getting votes from both parties. This is one of the untold stories of this caucus in Iowa, and particularly the polling shows that there are people who are Democrats, lifelong Democrats, who are really resonating with his message of anger and rebellion.
And they feel like this guy
is telling it like it is.
And you got to shake it up, and we got to move away from politicians.
Right. And of course, Bernie Sanders is appealing to a whole different crowd of people who are also very angry. It's going to be interesting who he pulls votes from. What happens, though, if you remember your civics class, is if this election splits three ways, and so, say, Bloomberg carries, like, New England states, and then the Republican candidate carries the southern states, and the Democrat carries most of the Midwest, say, you end up throwing the election to the House of Representatives, which is Republican.
Yeah.
Almost certainly remain Republican, and they would choose a Republican. Or maybe they would choose somebody brand new. I don't know.
They couldn't choose Trump. Could you see them having to make that choice?
I'm not sure what latitude they have. Maybe they can choose anybody. I'm now forgetting my
Even
civics.
Somebody who's not in the running, they could pick out a name and just go, this is our choice for president.
I think they could.
Live with it.
Bryan Cranston.
Well,
he's always good.
I do enjoy
Bryan Cranston.
But, you know, of course, the other possibility is they would pick someone like Paul Ryan, who I keep thinking the Republicans may try to settle on Paul Ryan. If their whole primary caucus situation is as crazy and crowded and nutty as we think it's going to be, there may not emerge from the process someone with enough votes at the convention to get the nomination, in which case they would throw open the convention to anyone who might, and they might go back to Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan.
Do you remember when you asked us to come up with our predictions for the year, and I jokingly said that Sarah Palin would be Donald Trump's running mate?
You did, and I laughed at you, and I'm not laughing anymore.
Is that a possibility?
I don't think so, because I think he's smart enough.
He's smart enough
to know that she's not smart enough to be.
Yeah.
But he might dangle that possibility out for quite a while. Because people like her. I wanted to like her.
And then I really did at the beginning. I was telling Bill, I liked, she was spunky. She was.
I hate spunk.
Be the answer, Lou Grant.
That'll never be one of your adjectives. But I just thought she was cool. She was she wasn't prissy. She was like a woman I could see, wow, she might be it. And then I started listening to her talk, and boy, did I have a different opinion.
Oh, man, it was bad, wasn't it?
She's like Mrs. Loupner from Saturday Night Live. You know, all right, Eric, thank you. We appreciate it. It's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Read him every chance you get. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has on the Wintrust business lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.